Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Lori Burris with the Catch a Pocket Podcast. Today, we're going to be covering music with Shane Marler. He has some stories about his musical experience in his life, and it's very interesting stuff, and I'm really ready to share it with you guys. Hopefully, it can help you become inspired or realize that anything's possible with a lot of effort, and Shane is a real good friend of mine, and I'm just really pleased that he came in and honored that he came in to the podcast to talk with me and tell his story about his adventures in music throughout his life. How's music changed your life? Was there a music that changed your perception of the world? So many great songs with feeling and music has the power to pull you up when you're down and get you hyped when you have a task to complete. Music makes people with different values, political views, and religious beliefs stand side by side and sing at the top of their lungs together. And for 3 minutes, they're friends. And the world is a beautiful place. When the song ends, we all come back to reality. Reality returns. Music makes my life tolerable. I find something I would like to learn or know about, and all the problems of the world disappear while I'm trying to figure out a tune. Music is an important part of our weddings, of our funerals. It helps us in moments of loneliness and happiness. It helps us remember things that might have gone in one ear and come out the other. Like what a bill on Capitol Hill really is. Schoolhouse Rock tunes. Music is savage sometimes, and it can be futuristic at times as well. I wouldn't want to live in a world without music. I've split this podcast in two because I had a really great conversation with Mr. Shane Marler about music adventures over his lifetime thus far, and I'm sure there's more to come, but we've documented this and we caught a pocket together. Sharing his experiences was very rewarding to me. So, without any further ado, my next guest is a well-known celebrity of Peabody and Wichita and around the world. His musical talent has no barriers. His band lists include O'Phil, the Mischief Makers, and the Nouveau Quintet. He also has released 3 solo albums, an instrumental called Cigan, a jazz vocal album called Just a Fool, and this year's rock reggae album, One Stop. I recommend them all equally. They all have fantastic points and can bring something enlightening to your world. He's also a painfully honest, great friend that has enriched my life immensely and made me a better person altogether. My next guest is Mr. Shane Marler.
So the first instrument I started on was banjo, actually.
And I respect banjo.
Right.
And the people that play banjo.
So my grandpa wanted me when I was like, probably 12.
Mm-hmm.
He convinced himself that I was going to play the banjo and I was going to win the banjo competition in Winfield. And that going to make everything amazing.
Okay.
And I tried it for a little while. Finger rolls, yeah. Oh. Front roll, reverse roll.
Really?
Yeah. I committed to it for about, I'm gonna say 6 weeks.
Really?
And I was totally not into it. I loved my grandpa, and I wanted to make him happy, but just slowly drifted away, and just I could not do it.
Okay.
I couldn't do it.
So how did that make you feel? Defeated, or did you feel ashamed?
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, not a lot.
You got over
it. He didn't really care. And then 4 years later, I started playing guitar. Mm. But the difference was I wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. That was the... And when I did that, like when I decided, okay, I'm going to play the guitar, and I got a guitar, mm-hmm. that's all I did. I mean, that's...
That like shuttered yourself in?
Absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so...
That's what Philip did, I believe.
Yeah, when I was 16, I asked my parents for... Okay, so here's how it really happened.
Okay.
So, all the way through my childhood, I was a tennis player. That's what I did. Like, my parents would take me, especially in the summer, and they would literally drop me off at, like, 7 o'clock in the morning at the tennis courts, uh-huh. and then come back. That was their babysitter. And come back and pick me up at, like,
5:30. Did you have lessons, or were you just playing?
Well, so during the summer, there was, like, a rec thing, mm-hmm. local rec thing where it's a tennis class. That's how it started.
Okay.
And then it ended up I was entering tournaments and all this crap, you know.
You were pretty good at it then.
Well, I did okay.
Okay.
I mean, actually, our Winfield's tennis team has always been, like, unbelievably good. And, like, when I was playing tennis, there were guys that were older than me, like, a couple years, and guys a couple years younger than me that went pro. Like, oh. Yeah, so...
Right.
And it became clear to me that while I was okay, mm-hmm. I was never... I didn't really want to pursue it.
And I
got burned out on it.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm 15, 16, and I've kind of had enough of it, mm-hmm. and I'm looking to change a little bit.
And you didn't have that, the people that were saying, you're going to be a pro someday,
like that. No, I mean, I did earlier, mm-hmm. Like when I was in 7th grade. You know,
right.
like my coach told my parents, which is horrible. If your son doesn't win the state tournament in high school in singles, uh-huh. then basically it's going to be a letdown. And I'm like, well, shit,
that's kind of horrible. Pressure.
Yeah, basically,
pressure
if your kid doesn't fulfill my prophecy, he's a fuck up. And you should let him know about it. Yeah,
sure.
So not it. Anyway, so tennis kind of lost its luster.
Mm-hmm.
But what brought on new luster was MTV,
okay.
and more specifically, as cheesy as this is, Guns N' Roses. I thought was just the coolest shit, because it was like the polar opposite
Appetite
of the world.
For destruction?
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely. It was the polar opposite of tennis in Winfield, Kansas, in 1992.
Sure. Stepping off the bus in California.
Exactly. Yeah, and those guys. You know, to me, they were alien, and I really liked that album. And so anyway, I turned 16. I'm like, fuck this tennis thing. I want to play the guitar. Yeah, I want to be Slash. That's what I want.
Well, that's a good guy to be, I think.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. I have come to find out I will never be him.
Well,
but so I asked my parents. Right, exactly. So I asked my parents, and we didn't have a lot of money. We lived in the quote-unquote ghetto of Winfield, if you will, on 3rd Street, which is not really a ghetto, but for Winfield, it's not the nicest part of town. It's not where the rich kids live, you know. It's
not a house on the hill with a gardener.
No, not at all.
Okay.
No, it's, I always joke that I went to the prison system of Winfield schools. I went to Irving Elementary, which is, I loved that school. I met all my friends there. But it was rougher. Like, when you went to recess, chances are you were either going to see a fight or be in a fight. So, you just come to terms with
smoke
that.
Smoke a cigarette.
Right, exactly.
On the playground
exactly.
Somewhere.
Right. So, I really just, you know, I want to start playing guitar because this guy looks and sounds badass, and I think I can be that. You know,
that's
the way.
Like, if he can do that, I can do
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, my parents ordered through the JCPenney catalog. There used to be a thing called catalogs. Right. Kids won't know what that
too.
Is. Yeah.
Yes.
You need to explain that
to the younger audience.
Exactly.
Probably.
They ordered me this like 3/4 size total piece of shit, like student guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. I mean, that's all I did once I got
pretty
it was
good guitar. I mean, like lower.
It was horrible
for what we have now.
Right.
Thing, but
yeah. Total
but you could,
piece
it
of shit.
It would keep a tune once
it
in
would,
a while.
It would sort of keep a tune.
Uh-huh.
It was great for learning how to tune because it wouldn't really keep a tune. So you're
more
constantly
than one
going.
Song.
Yeah, exactly. Just so okay. So on this house in this house on 3rd Street in the ghetto of Winfield.
Okay.
Behind the house there was a garage, and above the garage was a full apartment.
Okay.
Which my parents rented the house from this old guy that my dad knew. And at the time when I got this guitar, my Uncle Jim, who is like the black sheep of the family, never really had a job, been to jail lots of times.
Everybody has an Uncle Jim.
Yeah, exactly. So Uncle Jim, as everybody knows, your parents don't really want you around him, but you think he's fucking cool, right? Yeah, because he smokes cigarettes, he doesn't really have to go to work, yeah. You know, he's always telling you stories about getting kicked out of bars and
cool
shit.
Stories.
Yeah, exactly. So as it happens, he's living in this apartment behind my house.
Awesome.
Well,
of course.
I know that he plays guitar. So just so happens I get this guitar, and here's this guy 60 feet away that knows how. Right, exactly. So the first day I go up and I say, Uncle Jim, will you teach me something on the guitar? Right. So day one goes by, day two goes by, he's showing me some chords.
Uh-huh.
The first song I ever learned was Stairway to Heaven, but it was wrong.
Right.
He, you know, I found out
Uncle
later. He didn't really know.
It
he kind of, sort of. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I also learned, the second song I ever learned was Folsom Prison Blues by Johnny Cash.
Oh, great
right,
song.
Which, that was really the first time, I guess, I had the realization that you could play your own song and sing lyrics that are fucking cool. Like, uh-huh. They tell a story, and that just, like,
right.
Totally blew me away.
So it all kind of clicked in your mind?
It kind of did, yeah. In that one, I mean, in this, we're talking about the space of, like, 2 weeks. Like, my life just totally changed. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just went, holy shit, you know, and I was hooked.
Mm-hmm.
So on, like, the fourth or fifth day, I went up to my Uncle Jim. I would go every day after school, carry my little guitar up the stairs, you know,
right.
Knock on the door.
Mom, too much to her chagrin.
Absolutely, yeah. I wish he wouldn't fucking go out there. He's going to start smoking.
Smoking.
He's going to start smoking. Which I did start smoking, but it wasn't my Uncle Jim's
right.
fault.
Good.
So, like, the fourth or fifth day, I go up there, and I'm like, okay, Uncle Jim, you know, show me something.
Right.
And either he didn't want to dick around with me then or whatever, but he said, I've showed you everything I know. And I'm,
uh-huh.
So here's my first roadblock where I'm like,
uh-oh.
Well, shit, now what?
What
right?
do I do now?
Exactly. Because there was no YouTube. There was no internet to
right.
go online and learn shit.
Not like
you know?
Here. No
right.
G-tabs.
So we were lucky enough. We had a local music store. Went and tried to look at some guitar books, realized I don't know how to read music. I still to this day do not know how to read music.
Me either.
So Uncle Jim does what Uncle Jim does. He no longer lives in the apartment because my dad got pissed off at him or something, or he moved on, whatever.
Right.
So now this apartment's open, and I'm like, hey, I need my bedroom's kind of small.
Band practice.
Yeah, exactly. So I moved into that apartment.
Oh, wow.
And I lived there.
And how old were you?
I was 16.
Okay.
Now, I would come down, like, for meals and to shower.
Sure.
But other than that...
Would she go in there and straighten it up and
no,
stuff
oh, no,
for you
no,
or
no.
anything?
No, no. I was totally on my own, and it was
wow.
a fucking wreck, of course.
Yeah, definitely.
It was like being a bachelor at 16.
Yeah.
But I was also, like, scared shitless of my parents, like, getting in trouble, because my dad whooped my ass. It's not,
yeah.
You're in timeout.
No.
It was... The belt's
real
coming off.
Corporal
yeah.
punishment.
Exactly.
Stuff. Okay.
So I was scared shitless of that. He got his bluff in way early and it stuck with me.
Okay.
So I never like snuck. I didn't really sneak out and do crazy shit. I spent all my time sitting in that apartment with my guitar and I figured out
how to play songs.
How to play songs because
whoa.
I could listen to a song on my tape player. I had a tape player
mm-hmm.
before I had a CD player.
Right. I had a tape player.
Yeah.
A Walkman.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Walkman. Walkman was...
Jambox.
Walkman. I didn't have a Jambox. I had a Walkman with shitty, like, plug-in speakers that were, like, 2 inches big. And that was my car stereo. I had a, like, 73 Chevy Chevette.
Oh.
No, it was a 79 Chevy
Chevette.
Chevette. Yeah, total piece of shit car.
Whoa.
And I used to get in my car every morning to go to school, and I would press play on my Walkman and blast these tiny little speakers that went, you know.
Yeah.
But I would play No Sleep Till Brooklyn all the way to school,
awesome.
Smoking cigarettes. Yeah, and I thought I was badass.
Yeah,
you
gotta you
know?
Fight for
yeah.
the right to party.
Exactly, exactly. So, anyway, so I learned that I could listen to a song and figure it out on the guitar. And that was, then I was like, well, holy shit, there's this whole world out there.
Yeah.
So next step happens. So I start playing guitar, and I'm just playing like...
just by ear, with no lessons.
Well, we're getting to the lesson part.
Your uncle, except for
right.
your
uncle. Except for my uncle who taught me shit wrong.
Right.
Right,
taught
exactly.
taught you the wrong shit, and didn't really teach you anything.
Exactly. Okay. So... I'm just playing around with my fan, you know, I'm like, hey mom, look what I can, you know, yeah. I think it's the coolest shit. And they're like, oh yeah, that's great. Whatever. Well, my dad had a friend that he worked with that came over, and he heard me play, and he said, and he had been taking guitar lessons actually.
Right.
And he was like, why don't you go to my next guitar lesson and I'll pay for it. And you know, cause I've,
hey, that's nice.
You're already making more progress than I've been making in a year and a half or however long we've been playing. And I was like, holy shit, that's amazing. Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
So I went to this guitar lesson that cost $6, which was a shitload of money back then, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And so I go to this guitar lesson, and it's a local guy in Winfield who is still around the area.
Even today.
Okay. He's like my arch nemesis because he was kind of a dickhead.
To you?
To me, yep. And I can tell you that story too if you want. Okay. So anyway,
we'll take a break and then we'll go.
Right,
we'll
exactly. So I go to the lesson and he's like showing me the dumbest shit in the world, in my opinion. You know,
like songs that you thought were dumbest
songs.
Shit, or just...
not even songs. It was just like, okay, play your high E, now play your B, and then your E, and I'm just like, what the fuck? Next thing you know,
right,
like 45 minutes has gone by, and he's like, all right, well, do you wanna? Should I go ahead and schedule for you another lesson? I'm like, well, I'll let you know. And I left, and all I could think was...
you let him know.
That is just a total fucking waste of money.
$6, which you could have got another Walkman for.
Exactly.
Probably.
When I can sit in my apartment and put on whatever record I want and learn to play a song I actually want to learn instead of that stupid shit that he's trying to teach me, you know? I used to call the local radio station at Southwestern College.
Uh-huh.
They had like an independent radio station. And I would call and say, yeah, can you play Sultans of Swing by Dire Straits? Because my dad said I'd never be able to play that, right?
Uh-huh.
So I call the radio station and say, can you play Sultans of Swing by Dire Straits? They're like, yeah, sure. Then I would sit by my tape recorder and listen to the radio. And when it came on, I would push record.
Yeah.
And then when it was done, I'd push stop. And then I'd rewind it. And then I'd sit down and learn how to play it. So instead of going out and... I was a very early music pirate.
Right.
Instead of going out and buying the shit...
you double record it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I spent hours and hours and hours learning the guitar that way.
Yeah.
I spent literally thousands of hours with Appetite for Destruction.
And that's why you know the words so well, too. Because over and over again.
Yeah, there's not a note on that album I do not know.
That's awesome.
It took me a really long time to figure out that Slash tunes his guitar down a half step.
Always?
Yes, and that will fuck you up if you're trying to learn it. So you're learning everything a half step flat.
Right.
And then eventually I was like, oh my god, duh, yeah, he's just tuning the whole thing down.
Oh my god, duh.
Yeah.
How did I not figure that out?
Well, you know, I couldn't Google it back then.
Right.
Because it didn't exist.
We already found out where you're from.
Right.
But we're with Shane Marler on the third podcast, so.
It is the third podcast.
Yes, it is.
Third time's a charm.
Third time's a charm. New microphone.
Yeah, you bet.
So we talked about... your Winfield, starting the guitar.
Yep.
And then from there, you learned everything about Slash.
Okay, right. So I really get into music. Mm-hmm. And so from the time I start playing until my senior year in high school, which is only a couple years, 3 years, but seems like a lifetime when you're that age.
Yeah.
Every day I would get up, and in the morning I would play guitar. I got an amp, an electric guitar, so then I could play loud in my own apartment, you know.
Right.
You know, I just had to watch the clock, make sure I made it to school on time. So I would get up, and I would play guitar, and then I would come home from school, and I would play guitar. Okay. I didn't really have any friends, and that was okay, because
No friends from school.
Not really. I met my best friend, who is still my best friend, who we still hang out all the time.
At Winfield?
Yes.
Does he still live in Winfield?
He does not. He lives in Newton now, okay. Which is close to me. I live in Peabody, so it's only 15, 20 miles away.
Right.
So we still hang out and kick it, and he's got like 38 cool. kids now, but...
38?
Well, not 38. That's a lot. He has four.
That is a lot.
And that is a lot, yeah. Poor guy. I feel sorry for him, but... He loves him. And
he's always at work.
He's an awesome dad. And he actually is a school teacher as well. So he never gets away from kids. So he actually comes to my house occasionally, like, to get away from kid stuff.
Right.
We'll watch boxing or play video games or what, you know.
Does he like soccer too?
Not so much. No, he's a big Buffalo Bills fan. He played football in high school. He's an All-American guy.
Okay.
So he and I started hanging out, and he started coming over to my apartment. We both started smoking cigarettes. Mm-hmm. We both worked at the local Dairy Queen.
Okay.
And we would get off Friday night from Dairy Queen that closed at like 10 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents were pretty forgiving about like staying. If I told them what I was doing, it was cool. So I could like stay out till midnight or, you okay. know, one or whatever.
As long as you stayed out of trouble.
Exactly. So what he and I would do, he had this badass 1964 Ford Galaxy 500, which is a giant boat of a car, right? Right.
Muscle car.
Right. He and I would just hang out in his car on Main Street and smoke cigarettes and listen to oldies radio.
Uh-huh.
And sing along with the songs, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
There's a great story about my Uncle Jim with that. I'll tell you one of these days.
Okay.
So he started coming over to my apartment, and I started trying to write music. Like, I had gotten to the point where, okay, I figured out how to play other people's stuff. Can I write a song?
Sure.
And wrote these really cheesy, you know, we're depressed and girls emo. Don't understand us, but real folky. And shitty recordings, but he would come over and we started this little band. It was just the two of us, you know. Somewhere out there is a cassette tape. We distributed a few.
Okay.
Once we got to our senior year, we started making friends. And the way I made friends was I got invited to a party and I took my guitar one time.
Okay.
And when I was there, I started playing the hits that were on the radio at the time.
What they were playing at the party.
There was no music at the party. It was out in the country.
Okay.
And there was some drinking going on, of course, sure. underage drinking.
Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill.
Exactly. Yeah, you know the scene.
I've been there.
Exactly. So
I might have been at that party.
I was playing, like, you know, Beastie Boys, Pearl Jam, fucking Stone Temple Pilots, shit like that.
Cool. So you were pretty cool.
Of course I was. So I start playing these songs, and this might sound offensive, but it was like this magic key with girls. All of a sudden, they just went right around me, and I was like, "Oh my god, this is why I've been spending all this time with this thing."
I love you.
And so instantly, I like was kind of popular with some people and started
girls.
Yeah, and started getting invited to other parties, and I was like, "Holy shit, I'm so glad I spent all this time." But that wasn't why I did it. It just happened to be a side effect. A benefit of learning to play. So anyway, that's all I did all through high school. Then I went to college and...
Did you go to Southwestern?
I did not go to Southwest. So I had no intention of going to college at all.
Okay.
And I got a full ride music scholarship to Cali County Community College.
Okay, but
Cali, which is an Arc City.
Okay.
I was not planning on going at all. They actually mailed me the full ride. I never talked to anyone. What had happened was the guy that ran the music department at Cali County called the high school, and in high school, we had a guitar class.
Okay.
Where kids could learn to play.
It wasn't like jazz band. It was just guitar class.
No, it was guitar class.
Okay.
Which was right at the time where I'd been playing for like a year or so. And I thought, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. Mm-hmm. You know, this is way better than study hall.
Right.
So I would get
and you
to
can
go.
Make a grade and everything.
Yeah, exactly. And I totally should have flunked because I can't read music. And so what I used to do is we would sit in a half circle and there's probably 40 people in the class. I mean, it was a big class. And on test day, the instructor always started at one end or the other, and you knew when test day was, and I would always sit right in the middle, and set my sheet music in front of me. Okay. And by the time he got to me, I had learned by ear what they were playing, and I would pretend to read the music and play, you know, Für Elise by Beethoven or, wow, or whatever. And so,
I ended up hoping that at least three or four of those people knew exactly what they were.
I mean, they did their homework. Right. You know, they actually learned the stuff, and I'm, you know, trying to figure out Pearl Jam songs and Guns N' Roses songs. I'm like, I don't have time for this Beethoven shit.
Right.
You know, who cares?
Classical guitar.
Yeah, exactly. I have no interest. Interest later, of course.
Right, definitely.
So anyway, so the guy at Cali who ran the music department called my high school music teacher and said, do you have any good guitar players? And he said, well, yeah, this Shane kid is a good player, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
So they just mail me a full ride scholarship. I'm like, okay, so now I can go to college for free. I hadn't even thought about it, you know?
Wow.
And so I was like, okay, sign the paper.
Wow.
Go to college. For free. For free. Right. Okay. Go to college. I had moved out of my house and
moved it to Ark City?
Nope. I had moved in with my best friend. We got a bachelor pad, right? Because we graduated high school. We're men. We're on our own.
You're
blah,
partying.
Blah. Right. And I'm catching a ride to school every day with another guy that I know that's going to school there.
The Chevette gave it up, huh?
Yeah, it died. Yeah. Of course.
They always do.
They do. Well, I made it about 2 weeks before, and I can't remember how it happened, but the instructor there figured out that I couldn't read music.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, are you reading that chart? And I said, no. And he said, what? And he was a total dick about it.
Oh, man. He's and like, there were people around him.
Of course. It was the whole class. He was like, well, we can't use you then. And basically dropped my scholarship.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And I was
so
like,
2 weeks in the school.
Yeah. And I'm done. Yeah. Right. So I go back home and I had a part-time job. Which became a more part-time job, kind of a full-time job. It's never really full-time, you know?
Right.
But some of my friends from high school and I ended up starting a band in my kitchen in this bachelor pad that my best friend and I have, and that band turned out to be O'Phil.
Oh,
and
wow.
And so O'Phil started in my kitchen. We got our first gig was at the Winfield State Hospital, and it was a state hospital for the mentally handicapped. It was before it was a prison. It's a prison now.
Oh, okay.
And a VA.
Like a minimum security prison.
Right,
thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think my uncle went there.
Yeah, I think mine did too. So our first gig was playing basically for the mentally handicapped. And I thought it was the coolest shit ever because I got paid $12.50 to play my guitar. So I was like, I'm going to make it.
Yeah.
I'm going to end up being Slash.
This is a piece of cake.
Exactly. So next thing you know, we play a show. We got a show in Wichita.
Mm-hmm.
And that show was a battle of bands.
And who was all in the band at that point?
So at that point, it was myself, Saul Airy, who's still in Wichita.
Yeah.
Alex Thomas, of course. Everybody knows
everybody.
Alex.
Yeah.
Right?
Shout out.
Chris Burley, I don't know that you'd know him.
I don't know him, no.
He's moved around. He's been in D.C. and Colorado and...
And what does he play?
He played the drums.
Okay.
And a guy named Aaron Underwood, who is in Wichita, plays in lots of bands.
Okay. I think I've heard of him.
He played bass. He still plays bass, plays guitar. He's great natural talent. So, but we didn't know what the fuck we were doing.
You right.
know, we were just like...
Like reggae or rock
So we started out as like the world's shittiest band, trying to write our own songs
band.
All like... You know, sappy and cheesy and you know, whatever we could do.
Right.
And then we started trying to write these ska songs.
Okay.
And so we started writing ska songs, and it coincided with us playing at a Battle of the Bands at the Port of Wichita.
Okay.
Which, of course, we thought we were hot shit because we were playing in Wichita. I mean, for a kid from Winfield to get a gig in Wichita at 18 years of age, that's a big deal.
At a bar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a big deal, right?
Yeah.
So we go to the Port of Wichita, we play the Battle of the Bands, and we win.
That's even a big round. Okay, the first round.
Right, so now we're really thinking we're hot shit, of course, and the whole time we're like writing songs. So we get to like the semifinals or whatever the next time.
With all original music.
It wasn't all original, but it was like 80% probably.
Okay.
We covered like an ME330 song. Which I love MU330. If you haven't listened to them, they're a great ska band from St. Louis.
Okay.
I had their albums and I just absolutely adored them, thought they were the best thing in the world. We played the second round and we lost to a band called Diesel Crutch, which was a local Wichita.
Heard of them.
That band fucking kicked ass, man. Yeah. They blew me away. I was like, oh, yeah, we're not that good. Yeah, this is totally different.
But that's kind of nice to get your butt kicked.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. I mean, at the time, it hurts, of course. Yeah. Because I'm going back to Winfield with my tail between my legs.
We didn't.
And I thought I was this great guitar player,
mm-hmm.
Which in hindsight, of course, I was not. But they had a...
pretty dang good.
Well, I appreciate that. But they had a guitar player named Michael Lacey, who was...
I know Michael Lacey.
Yeah, he's older than I am.
He was my manager at Blockbuster Music.
That's right. Yeah, well, he's a badass guitar player.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't know who any of these people were. I'm not from Wichita. I don't know any of these people. And he's good. He's a great guitar player.
That's where I heard of Diesel Crutch
before. Yeah. And he blew me away. I was like, holy shit, I need to go back and start practicing because this dude's on a seriously different level.
Yeah.
Now, granted, I've been playing for 2 years and I'm 18 years
old. You're 18 years old.
Yeah.
And he's probably but that was my, 21
Right.
Or
that was my first, real ass kicking and wake up call. And so I'm totally gutted. You know, we lost. Here I thought we were going to do great. So the prize for this Battle of the Bands was you got to play at this music festival called Ozfest, which that year was at the Kansas Coliseum.
Is that the one that Ozzy plays at the end?
No. So Ozzy had his own Ozfest after this Ozfest.
This was Oz, like the
Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, exactly. We're in Kansas.
Yeah, but it was a big show, right?
Yeah.
So we're totally bummed because we don't win the prize and we're limping back to Winfield and life sucks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a guy at this gig who was a T95 radio DJ named Rockin' Rick Regan.
Oh, sure. Everybody knows Rockin' Rick.
Exactly. So Rockin' Rick loved us.
Okay.
And somehow pulled strings and got us on this Ozfest thing anyway. And once that happened, there were a lot of people at that festival. I don't know how many. But
right.
There were a lot of people.
Where was the festival?
It was at the Coliseum that time.
Oh, okay.
And then the next year, I think it was at the West Bank stage or vice versa.
Right.
I don't know. It all kind of blends together after a while. But the moral of that story is that once we kind of had a contact in Wichita, then all of a sudden, and Alex has always been really great about booking shows. He started booking shows.
So he was more your promoter of all the people in the band?
He was the one
that went out there and got the gigs and stuff.
He was the one that made the phone calls and all that stuff to get us gigs. So next thing you know, we're starting to play in Wichita at different places. Mm-hmm. We played at a bar called Kirby's 2 a thousand times.
That's on Harry Street or something
Lincoln,
like that?
I think.
Lincoln, okay. Yeah, I remember that. And my coach for softball is Gavin Greenmar, who became a Kirbite from Kirby's 2 to Kirby's.
To Kirby's, yeah. Isn't that crazy
how
that works? Yeah, so we used to play in there all the time, and we thought it was great because they would serve us underage alcohol. So, which was wonderful. It was a long time ago.
Yeah,
but
they're not open anymore.
So. Right, exactly. So we started banging around, and then the next thing you know, we're doing bigger shows.
Mm-hmm.
We played at the 1997, I think, Warped Tour. Had a show in Lawrence or Kansas City or something. We were on that, which was
when
totally
did you start
cool.
integrating in the horns, Ryan Heinlein
so,
and those?
So we did that kind of right away, actually. Uh-huh. We started with a sax and a trumpet, and they were the drummer's sister-in-law sort of played sax, shit like that.
Can you come in and blow the horn a little for our ska, that kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And then, you know how that goes. They kind of well, I'm not really a musician. I don't have any interest in this.
That was fun, but
I'm
busy.
Exactly. And then we ended up getting these different horn players and, you know, late 90s, we had we went all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ophel ended up playing in LA and Chicago, Dallas, and actually we did one of my favorite memories of playing with Ophel was we did some shows with Softy with John Eaton and John Grant.
I love John Eaton. Now I'm gonna bring him in
down in Texas, and oh my god, it was so much fun traveling with those guys. Just hilarious.
Yeah.
Fun times.
And so that ended up being my college, if you will, was okay. I traveled around and played music, which I thought was 1,000 times way better and cooler than any college I could have ever gone to.
Yeah, and you probably learned more anyway.
Well, life skills, absolutely. Yeah. You know, so I did my share of partying and saw my share of drugs and mm-hmm. all, you know, and did all that stuff.
All the rock tour thing.
Right. And so by the time I was like 27, mm-hmm. so I've been doing it for like 10 years, I was pretty burnt out.
Yeah.
Like I've had enough. And unfortunately, slash fortunately,
yeah,
we were like kind of successful enough locally
mm-hmm.
that like we would get these bigger shows like at the Cotillion and stuff.
Right.
And when you're in a band like that and you get a show like that, your natural thought is, oh my God, we're going to make it. You know, we're going right. to sign to a major label.
You
want to
think positively.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're playing with bands that are signed that you see on TV, you know, mm-hmm. so... shit, we got to be right around the corner, right?
Right, any
you know?
Minute now.
When really it's just the local promoter kind of using you to sell a few extra local tickets. Yeah, exactly. But you don't think about that shit
right.
at the time. And by the time I got to that, so I very much wanted to be a rock star, you know, during that whole period. But mm-hmm. toward the end, I kind of decided maybe this wasn't the life I wanted.
Right.
Because I'd kind of been there, done that a little bit. And I, you know, I was getting older and mm-hmm. it's just not nearly
it's
as exciting.
Tiring, yeah.
right.
After you've done it over and over
yeah,
again.
Yeah, I mean, the towns kind of all start looking the same
right.
and, you know, the people are all kind of the same.
The way that they are and schmoozing
yeah.
and all that.
Yeah, I mean. It,
having to hang out and be up after a show when
right.
you're exhausted.
Exactly. Yeah. yeah. Well, and see, that was the other thing was like the, so some people are great at the shows over. Let's go to the after party
mm-hmm.
and let's kick it till 4 o'clock in the morning
right.
and then we'll crash for a couple hours and we'll get up and we'll do it again.
Yeah. Someone will drive us somewhere. And
right.
We'll
exactly.
Sleep on the
and,
van.
And I did that for a little while, but it ended up not really being my thing. I
right.
wanted to play the show, hang out for a little bit, tell everybody, hey, it's great to see you.
Right.
That was fun. And now I want to go to bed.
Right.
You know,
everybody out of here.
Yeah, exactly. So long story short, I quit Ophil.
Okay.
Ophil kept going. They got a replacement guy,
uh-huh.
A guy named Steve Turner. I have no idea what happened to him. I came back to Ophil
uh-huh.
after, I don't know, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years off, something like that.
Yeah.
Did some shows with them.
Just locally or?
No. Still like, traveling around.
Oh, okay.
Like to,
they were still traveling around.
Yeah, but
okay.
to like Lawrence, Kansas City, not like.
Regionally.
Yeah, we didn't do any trips to Chicago then, I don't
no
think.
No LA.
Or, yeah, no LA,
okay.
right. So I came back for a while and it was great. I mean, I love all those guys. And like, so in my mind, there's a core of like 8 or 10 Ophil guys. That those guys are my brothers
mm-hmm.
and I will love them no matter what. Till then, till I take
right.
my last breath.
Right.
And I still see them every once in a while, and it's great.
It's like time.
Yeah.
Just
yeah, exactly.
Hasn't even passed.
Exactly, and we can tell stories, and
yeah, that's
you know,
awesome.
I still see Jason Tubner and Ryan Heinlein and Alex,
right.
and you know, you bump into them,
sure.
and it's just like
they're awesome people.
They are awesome.
Yeah.
People. Exactly. So I was really fortunate to be in a band with a bunch of awesome people, and we had a shitload of fun. I mean,
yeah.
The crazy shit
like
that
it.
We did was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Great band.
So then I quit Ophil a second time. And
okay.
I'm done. I'm really done this
You're
time.
Really done.
Like, I'm really done. And I've played one or two reunion shows. Alex likes to have reunion
mm-hmm.
shows, and he'll call me up. And 4 out of 5 times I say no.
Really?
No, yeah, not going to do it.
Yeah.
But then every once in a while I'll say, yeah, okay, why not?
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which we played at the Brickyard, I don't know, maybe.
I think I was there for that
5 years
that
ago or
show.
Something like that.
Yeah,
yeah, shitload of people.
Yeah.
And there's still a following out there of people that like that music. And that's great.
Yeah.
You know, what more do you want?
I like
you know?
Y'all. So I like all of you each individually.
Right?
I know you a different way.
Right.
So
sure.
So it was really nice to see, like, in the element.
Right.
The whole
Combined,
thing come
yeah.
together. Like Ryan, Jason,
right,
you,
yeah,
Alex.
Right,
I was just
yeah.
like, whoa, who knew?
This is, yeah, this is weird.
Because I didn't.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't you had know that connection.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, we spent lots of hours together in a van.
Well,
yeah.
that's different.
So, yeah, you love each other and you hate each other all
right,
the time.
Right, you
want to
get away
yeah,
after
yeah.
so many days
exactly.
in a van together.
So I was done with that, and I loved the band. I loved the music, and part of what I did in the band was write some. I was never really a lyricist. Mm-hmm. Alex and I, in the early days, would kind of write lyrics together.
Yeah.
And our songs were cheesy and fun. You know, comedy was a good, important part for us, we thought, at that age, you know. But I really liked writing the music and, like, arranging vocal harmonies. Oh, my God, I loved doing that, you know, at band practice, you know.
Sure.
Okay, you sing this and you sing,
try
you know.
Try this. Let's try this.
And a lot of the guys in the band had really good ears, and so it wasn't a lot of work, or they would say, well, no, we should sing this. And
like, oh, that sounds a little funny to me.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah. I really enjoyed that part of it. So I'm done with that band.
Okay.
And now I don't know what I'm going to do.
And how old are you right then?
I'm probably 31 maybe.
Okay.
Well, that was the first half of this podcast. So this is going to be episode number 3A. And the next time we come back, it's going to be 3B with Shane Marlar telling the rest of the story. Coming back with the way he discovered Gypsy Jazz and all the adventures that that took him on. Very exciting stuff. Looking forward to sharing it with you on the next episode of Catch a Pocket. Special thanks for this episode goes out to Phil and Fletcher Burns for helping me with all the technical aspects that go on with making a podcast. And also the Tuttles for the pictures and the wonderful photographs that I use on my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram sometimes. Also, thank you to Kirk Runstrom and my sister Lisa for allowing me to use the intro music and the music you hear while we're in production. And also, following this episode, I'm going to use the title track from Shane's new album, One Stop. Give it a listen. It's awesome. Buy the album. It's available on everything right now. So, thank you, Shane. We'll see you guys and finish Shane's story in the next few weeks. You can reach us on Gmail at catchapocket@gmail.com. We also have a Facebook page, Twitter link. We're on Podbean. Podbean gives you the best podcasts that are out there for free. It's a free app there. You can get it on Apple or Android devices. I'd also like to thank anyone who supports this podcast and takes the time to give it a listen. I hope you all catch a pocket you can be proud of. See you next time. If it's loving, that's me. When you get a feeling down, a tugging and a kiss, you don't know what you're missing. Yeah.
town.